And welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room podcast. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News, and I also co-host the Down the Stretch radio show on Saturdays with the legendary Dave Johnson.
How y'all doing? I'm Randy Moss with NBC Sports and part of the Buyer Speed Figure team as well.
T.D. Thornton here, speaking to you from Boston, and I'm a stablemate of Bill's, a correspondent with Thoroughbred Daily News.
All right, guys. Well, there was plenty to write about when it comes to the situation in California last week, and it's kind of an ugly story. I'm sure most people that were watching the podcast, listening to the podcast, know the particulars, but I'll just give you, the skinny on it right now. Santa Anita, on the day before a California Horse Racing Board meeting in which they were going to be asked to ratify a dates request from Pleasant and Fair, put out a statement that was pretty, it was a lot of saber rattling there. They said that if they approved the expansion of the California Fair Circuit up north, they would look into either selling or closing Santa Anita Park. And I mean, that's pretty scary stuff to hear that. They want the Northern California circuit to disappear for a couple of reasons. Number one is they think they're going to get all the Northern California horses to ship down to Santa Anita, so they have a bigger horse population. The other is that the simulcasting money is now divided between North and South. They figure if the North goes away, they would get all the simulcasting money. So that's what happened. The CHRB actually seemed to be angered by these threats from the First Racing and the Stronach Group. One of the commissioners said, "I'm upset because I don't do well with bullying." That's what he said in response to the letter written by Craig Fable. But where's this all going? What does it mean for the future of racing in California? And is Santa Anita in dire trouble? I'll let Randy take that first and then hear what TD has to say.
Well, when they actually had the meeting and voted, I think Craig Fravel sort of put his saber back in his sheath just a little bit and said that he had spoken to Belinda Stronach and that Belinda was committed to trying to make the best of the situation short and long term at Santa Anita. Look, I'm just glad I'm not on the CHRB board. They had an impossible choice to make because there's really, my opinion, there's no real wrong answer there. You've got a breeding industry in Northern California and a lot of people whose livelihoods are tied up to racing in Northern California. Clearly, Santa Anita First Racing felt like they couldn't make a go of it at Golden Gate. They were reportedly losing quite a bit of money. And it would be very difficult for the CHRB board to just completely turn away from a group that still wanted to give racing in Northern California a go at Pleasanton. So I don't really feel like they had a choice other than to do what they did and to see if they could make Northern California racing profitable, right? But by the same token, I don't think Craig Fravel or Del Mar are wrong in what they were hoping to accomplish with increasing purses primarily at Santa Anita and Del Mar, because that is a major problem right now at Santa Anita. I mean, they're losing in the horse population. If you're a breeder or an owner with a really good three-year-old, a lot of people are saying, why send him to Southern California and have to knock my heads against Bob Baffert all the time when the purses are much higher in New York, they're much higher in Kentucky, they're much higher in Arkansas. All because of casino-funded purse money, which California doesn't have. And they really don't have any prospects right now of getting additional casino gambling to fuel their purses at Santa Anita. Because right now there are more than 70 Native American casinos operating in California. They have a huge lobby with the legislators in California. And in talking to people at Santa Anita and elsewhere, even the legislators in California that are extremely friendly to horse racing, right? Anytime someone from the racetracks comes to them and even tries to initiate a conversation about expanded gaming, they get the Heisman. Nope. Don't even go there. Don't even start that conversation. So it's really a difficult situation that Santa Anita finds itself in. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit alarmist to say that the future of Santa Anita is in jeopardy, but I don't think that's terribly far-fetched given the situation that they're in right now with purses and with horse population. They've got to find something. That's why they're doing the California Crown. Belinda's trying anything she can try, I think, to try to turn things around a little at Santa Anita. But there is a problem, definitely.
And I covered this meeting for TDN, and the chief takeaway for me was, after all the smoke had cleared after the 6-0 vote to give the go-ahead for Pleasanton to try to become the new center of Northern California racing, the chief takeaway was, we have to stop thinking of ourselves, this is the California folks talking, as North versus South, as two separate circuits. It doesn't work that way anymore. It's not going to work that way anymore going forward. They have to think of the state as an entire entity and stop the regionalism and the factionalism that's come up out of this. Although I will say the folks from the North, they blitzed the interests that were in favor of the Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Thoroughbred Owners of California plan to kind of redistribute that purse money. They did have a tremendous amount of support, but they're going to have to act as one entity if they do want to have a future.
You know, Randy, you brought up a lot of good points. And, you know, look, I hope that Santa Anita is here 50 years from now, that my grandchildren will be going to the Santa Anita Handicap and the Santa Anita Derby. But there was one thing in Frable's letter that really jumped off the page to me. And he said over the last 5 years, they've lost $31 million operating the track, plus they spent $32 million in capital expenditures. That's a lot of money. And, you know, you can't look at this business as the status quo of Santa Anita and say, well, you can do this, you can do that, and then you can become profitable. No, they can't. There's nothing that they can do to erase that $63 million deficit. Now, I mean, they can cut a few corners here, maybe not do so many, maybe shelve some of the capital expenditures they're planning to put in. But I think those of us in racing sometimes forget that these are business people. And you run a business no different than a guy who owns a restaurant. If he gets no customers, he's not making any money, he's going to close down the restaurant. Randy, I just don't see any way that they can reverse this. And then so the choices look to be, we can continue to lose money, or we could sell the place for $1 billion. Now, I think the Stronach Group, by and large, has been very loyal to racing, much more so than Churchill Downs. And I think that they like racing and want to do the right thing by the sport. But man, those numbers, what person just looking at this from a bottom line business standpoint wouldn't close the place down?
You know, 20, 25 years ago, there were people within the industry that were loudly proclaiming the sport does not need to get hooked up with casino gambling. You're making a deal with the devil. Now we've gotten to the point where, much like Lou Sella told us as the Green Group guest of the week last year, he believes that in 10 years, tracks that major racetracks that aren't affiliated with some sort of casino gambling will cease to exist. And that seems to be the only solution that I can see, at least, to the problems at Santa Anita. And yet it's a solution that doesn't seem to have a happy ending based on what the political ramifications are right now. I can see a couple things maybe happening. If it gets to the point where legislators believe that Santa Anita might truly be in danger of shutting down, might that change the equation somewhat with their relationships with gambling vis-a-vis the Indian tribes? If not, it may come down to the point where, if Belinda wants to sell, that the legislators then tell the Indian tribes, look, we're either going to approve casino wagering at Santa Anita, or you can buy the racetrack yourself and run it as an Indian tribe, which we see at Remington Park and we see at Lone Star Park. And then you can, you know, try to get casino gaming there and be part of it along with your casinos. Those are the two options that I can see, but maybe I'm overlooking something, TD.
Yeah, certainly a difficult situation for sure. And I don't think that this is the last that we're going to be discussing it. We do wish the folks in Northern California some luck going forward with the Pleasanton venture.
I want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Congratulations to this weekend's winning Keeneland graduates, including Louisiana Derby winner Catching Freedom. And a reminder that the entry deadline for the April Horses of Racing Age sale print catalog is April 1st. Supplements will continue to be considered until the sales date. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
At Keeneland, a horse will always be measured in hands. Hands that see, that sense, that speak. Hands that hold our sport to a higher standard. Not for our sake, but for theirs. For the love of the horse, for generations to come.
The fastest horse of the week is brought to you by the Red Hot Constitution, one of those fast sires at Windstar Farm. And as you might be able to guess from his name, Catching Freedom, the Louisiana Derby winner, is a son of Constitution. And it's not just Catching Freedom that's making headlines. Overall, Constitution is the number two sire of 2024 three-year-olds. And Constitution stands now for $110,000 at Windstar Farm. Now for the fastest horse of the week, who is also the fastest horse of the year and essentially the fastest horse of the last 2 years. Remarkably, she's a six-year-old Louisiana-bred mare by the name of Ova Charged, who won Sunday's Paige Cortez Stakes on closing day at the fairgrounds, a 5.5-furlong turf race, mind you, by 12.5 lengths with a buyer speed figure of 113. Not only the highest buyer speed figure of this year, it's the highest since Flightline won the Breeders' Cup Classic November 5th, 2022. And it's the highest at the fairgrounds in the last 12 years. Overcharged is a freak. She's won 12 of her last 15 starts, 3-for-3 on turf, all in sprints, a combined 24.75 lengths. Probably has to be considered one of, if not the fastest turf sprinter in the country right now. Owned by the Britland Stable, trained by Shane Wilson. And another offspring of the Louisiana supersire, Star Guitar. We talked to Jake DeLome last week. He's got that really good Louisiana bred touch upon a star, right? Who was second in the New Orleans Classic, ran a heck of a race on Saturday by Star Guitar. The race after Overcharge was the Star Guitar Stakes, won by a horse named Behemoth Star, a son of Star Guitar. I know if I had a really good broodmare and I was in the business of racing and not commercially selling them, I would probably send it to this $5,500 stud fee stallion, Star Guitar, down in Louisiana. Overcharged, though, is really something else.
Yeah, that was quite a story coming out of Fairgrounds over the weekend. Speaking of Fairgrounds, let's do our recap and review of last weekend's action. We're going to talk to Brad Cox a little bit later, and he was the man of the hour at the Fairgrounds, winning both the Louisiana Derby and the Fairgrounds Oaks, Louisiana Derby with Catching Freedom and the Fairgrounds Oaks with Tarifa. 97 buyer for Catching Freedom. Is he the Derby favorite? No. Is he one of the five best horses in the Derby, maybe, definitely one of the 10 best. But I tell you, the one thing that did impress me about him was the kind of trip that he got. He was 11th and last down the backstretch, and the pace was not fast. They went 23.49 and 48.33. He came from the clouds and overcame that slow pace to win pretty impressively. That would lead you to believe that a mile and a quarter is not going to be any kind of problem for him. But I thought that the pace that he overcame, the disappointment in the race to me was Track Phantom. I was worried that he would have trouble from the 12 hole. He had no trouble whatsoever. The jock did a great job getting him over, saving ground. He just ran fourth and had no real excuse. Dee Dee, what'd you think?
You know, I'm going to take a contrary point of view there. I think, yes, it was a disappointing effort, but Track Phantom did have things all his own way, but he also, when they turned for home, he had five horses stacking up behind him, and he looked to be swallowed up within a matter of a couple of strides. He stayed on under duress until the 16th pole. And this is a horse that I think when you widen the lens and look at the Derby picture this year and see that it is not replete with speed horses, there aren't a lot of early blazers on the front end. It's very stacked heavily with horses who are mid-pack closers or horses who fire from well off the tailgate. You know, you get five more weeks. Trainer Steve Asmussen sharpens him a little bit. He could be kind of a little bit of a wise guy threat, although I will agree with your first blush analysis that it was a disappointing try.
Look, and I believe that Catching Freedom right now, before we see any of these other major Derby preps, would have to be considered one of the top five Kentucky Derby contenders. Look, I loved his race. The pace, as you pointed out, was not particularly fast, and he was last early. And it's not very often that you see a horse from that far back in a slow-paced race run by horses as authoritatively as he did around the second turn. He had a heck of a turn of foot wide running around the second turn. Second thing I want to point out, I want to talk about here is the speed figure, right? 97 buyer speed figure. It's an ironclad, easy to make, solid speed figure, right? It's a huge improvement for almost every horse in the race, right? And it's an ironclad speed figure as opposed to the primary prep race for the Louisiana Derby, the Risen Star. And here's what I mean by that. Like, I do the speed figures at fairgrounds. And the bane of a speed figure maker's existence is a racetrack surface, especially on a major stakes day, that changes from the beginning to the end. You typically see that when you have weather conditions at a racetrack, right? And on Risen Star Day, it was horribly sloppy. They were getting intermittent rain showers throughout the day. And when you look at the dirt races as a whole, there was absolutely no doubt that the final two races on the card, the Rachel Alexander and the Risen Star, were run over a much slower track surface than even an hour before when they ran the Mineshaft Stakes for older horses. If you had just looked at the Mineshaft result and you had applied that same variant to the last two races and assumed that the track didn't change, then both Tarifa and Sierra Leone would have run buyer speed figures of an 83. So obviously the track got a lot slower for those two races, but how much slower? It's a guessing game. They're improving three-year-olds, fillies and colts. It's really difficult to tell how much they could have improved. And on top of it all, the pace in the Risen Star was slow. As it turns out, I think in hindsight, if you're handicapping, I think you can look at the Risen Star buyer speed figure of 90, and you can probably mentally give it about a 4 to 5 point boost. Okay. So you could look at Sierra Leone as more like a 94 or a 95 horse instead of a 90 horse. And I think Track Phantom ran his usual typical race and just was outrun by the three horses in front of him. And Tuscan Gold, by the way, the third place finisher, ran a heck of a race in defeat. And if he had gotten a little bit better ride by Tyler Gaffleone going into the first turn to tuck in instead of going four wide, he might have been right up there at the finish with the winner. So a heck of a prep race.
Well, let's switch gears now. We're going to talk to Brad Cox in a little bit. Well, why don't we save Tarifa for the Brad Cox conversation? She's the winner of the Fairgrounds Oaks. And let's head over to Turfway Park, where the Jeff Ruby Stakes was on the card for three-year-olds on the synthetic surface. Mixed bag here. We got a pretty good horse by the name of Endlessly. It's his second straight win, second straight over synthetic surfaces, trained by Michael McCarthy. He came out the next day and said, I am not going in the Kentucky Derby. I'm going to run instead in the American turf during Derby week at Churchill Downs. McCarthy's a smart trainer. And to me, that looks like a smart move. I mean, do you really want to throw this horse into the Kentucky Derby to make his dirt debut? Has never run on the dirt. That would seem to be an impossible situation. And, you know, there's other big races out there. The American Turf is a big race. He could have a very good year with air. But sometimes, Didi, it's refreshing to see somebody who actually doesn't have Derby fever.
Yeah, the horse will be going on the first Saturday in May at Churchill Downs, just not in the Kentucky Derby. And I think that's an admirable call. And in some ways, it's a gutsy call not to kind of get caught up in the moment. One trip note out of that race, a horse who that who endlessly might face on the turf at some point down the road. I caught a nice trip on Noted in that race. That was his first time racing on a synthetic surface. They were trying to get him some Derby points and see if he could become a Derby candidate. He was close up on the inside, a little closer than usual, ran into a wall of traffic off the turn. He was locked and blocked and bounced around there a little bit. And then when Luis Saez knew he didn't have any chance of winning, he just eased up on the horse and it did not get charted. That trouble did not appear in the charts. So I think Noted is going to go back on the turf and he might hook up with Endlessly at some point in the future.
I asked Michael McCarthy, the trainer of Endlessly, the day before the race. So looking at the race on paper, who do you worry about the most? Who are you most concerned about? And he said, I'm not concerned about any of them. Said, I hate to talk like that, but he said, I'll be shocked if Endlessly doesn't win this race. And then the next question obviously was, if he does win and he wins impressively, the owners, John and Jerry Ammerman, have never had a horse in the Kentucky Derby. How difficult will it be to talk them out of trying the Derby? And he said, so far, so good. They seem to be very reasonable about the horse and about his pedigree and his running style and the fact that he looks like he's better on turf and maybe synthetic. And apparently that seems to be what the plan is right now, to run in the American turf on Derby Day instead of the Kentucky Derby itself. The runner-up, West Saratoga, good story, 36-1. Larry Demeritt, small-time trainer. Owner Harry Verrucci, by far the best horse he's ever had. It looks like they're going to persevere and go on to the Kentucky Derby. Seize the Gray, finished third. Doesn't have enough points yet, but it's Wayne Lucas, and you've got the Lexington Stakes. So who knows? You may see Seize the Gray get one more opportunity to rack up some Derby points, right?
The Bourbonnette Oaks was won by Everland, and TD had a good story on following up on the Bourbonnette Oaks, that this horse was claimed for $30,000. On December 30th, and look what we have 4 months later, this horse wins a stakes race. You know, again, a nice enough horse. Do I think this horse will win the Kentucky Oaks? No, but they've earned their way in there. And TD, tell us a little bit more about the story of Eric Foster and claiming this horse for $30,000.
Everland, certainly a nice story, a $30,000 claimer not only, but she almost got knocked down the day that she was claimed on December 30th by Eric Foster, who is the leading trainer at Turfway in terms of wins. He's the second leading trainer of the Turfway meet in terms of earnings, only behind the powerhouse outfit of Brad Cox. She subsequently won a starter allowance race. She ran fourth in a $150,000 stakes race. And on Saturday, she got hooked four wide around the clubhouse turn. She was starting to motor on the far turn, and then she briefly ran up on the heels of her tiring stablemate who had set the pace. And then she scooted up the rail and won like a good thing. And unlike Endlessly, the connections of Everland, they do have fever for the first weekend in May because they are taking their points that they earned in the Bourbonnette, and they're going to the Oaks, even though Everland has not raced on the dirt.
One of our key sponsors here at the TD and Riders Room is the PHBA, the Thoroughbred Horse Breeders Association. We just told you about the sensational Overcharge, the fastest horse of the week. How about the second fastest horse of the week? That would be Pennsylvania bred I'm Very Busy, the Chad Brown-trained Pegasus World Cup turf runner-up, who found enough time in his busy schedule to storm down the stretch to win the Mervyn Muniz at the fairgrounds by 3¾ lengths for a buyer speed figure of 103. That ties Du Jour for the second fastest buyer among two-turn turf horses so far this year. I'm Very Busy, bred in the Keystone State by Glenn Brock and Martha Tuthaker. Those PA breds just keep on winning. And here's a new Pennsylvania bred on the ground. Zoe Cadman thinks all foals are cute, but this one certainly fits the bill. This little guy is a half-brother to Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint winner Caravelle. He's by Justify, out of the mare ZZ Zoom Zoom, owned by Elizabeth Merriman, and born on March the 3rd. Isn't he cute? For more information on breeding your very own Pennsylvania bred, visit www.pabred.com.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late, it's a photo finish!
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a 3-year-old. Renton, Pennsylvania.
So it's time for the Coolmore Stallion of the Week. And this week, that is American Pharoah. American Pharoah was the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. He was the 2015 Horse of the Year and 2014 Eclipse Champion Juvenile. Sire of 45 stakes winners, his 2023 yearling sold for up to $1.2 million. And he is on a roll in the month of March alone. Listen to this. Wasakuso, I hope I'm pronouncing that somewhat right, won the Grade 3 Florida Oaks at Tampa Bay Downs. Forever Super won the Turf Classic Stakes at Tampa Bay. Gahila Princess won the Cicada at Aqueduct for Brad Cox. We'll target the Grade 3 Gazelle Stakes next. Sweet Rebecca was named a TDN Rising Star on debut and has since been purchased privately by John Stewart's Resolute Racing, who also signed for a $525,000 American Pharoah filly at OBS March. Riff Rocket won the second career Grade 1 in Australia on Saturday when taking the Rose Hill Guinness. And in the race you're watching here, Breeders' Cup Juvenile Phillies runner-up Jody's Pride won the Busher Stakes and is now ranked number one on the Kentucky Oaks leaderboard. Randy, I feel that American Pharoah is kind of overlooked as a sire, despite all his accomplishments we just mentioned. Why do you think that is?
Well, he's becoming increasingly overlooked. Obviously, when he first retired as the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years, there was Pharoah mania. There was all sorts of anticipation to see his first foals. And it was always going to be difficult to sustain that level of Pharoah mania, very similar to Secretariat when he retired. And now some other super stallions have come into the mix. Most notably, Coolmore's other Triple Crown stallion, Justifies. Even within his own barn right now, American Pharoah is being sort of out-hyped, so to speak. But the fact remains that American Pharoah is an outstanding stallion who produces athletic foals with good minds like Justify. They can succeed on dirt or grass. And the real positive, I think, for breeders in all of this, Bill, is that they can now tap into a Triple Crown winner at what has become a very reasonable price.
Yeah, and that price is $50,000. American Pharoah stands at Coolmore for the aforementioned $50,000. And congratulations to the American Pharoah team for a real, real good run there. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by The Green Group, a tax accounting advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry and designed to save you taxes. And we welcome in now the Green Group guest of the week. Not only is he Brad Cox, the future Hall of Famer, guy's loaded with everything, he's got to be the hottest trainer in the country right now. What a weekend Brad Cox had. He won the Fairgrounds Oaks, Louisiana Derby, the Hot Spring Stakes, and the Essex all over the weekend. Biggest wins, of course, were in the Fairgrounds Oaks with Tarifa and the Louisiana Derby with Catching Freedom. And Brad, I've asked you this question before, but now with Catching Freedom and Timberlake, you've got at the very least two very strong candidates for this year's Kentucky Derby. Brad, officially you have won a Kentucky Derby with Mandaloon after the DQ of Medina Spirit. But does it feel like you've won a Derby? Are you going to go into Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May and think, I'm going to win this one and I'm going to do it the easy way this time?
Well, there's no easy way. I know that. No, it doesn't feel like we won the Derby at all. I've always said that the Derby's a race, you know, it's not the purse. I mean, we won the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's the thrill of victory. That's what you're after with the Derby. It's a very hard race to get to. It's like no other in America. It's the only race where there are 20 horses, and it's, you know, it's tough to just get to, let alone win. No, I don't feel like we've won a Derby, and looking forward to Derby 150 for sure.
So I was just joking before you joined us here that you know a guy's going good when you've got to make notes of all his three-year-olds to make sure that you don't skip over any of them. The most obvious one, Catching Freedom. Let's talk about him for a second, right? Here's a horse going into the Louisiana Derby that had a reputation as maybe a bit of an overachiever who wouldn't wow anybody in the mornings, who would sometimes act green and a little squirrely in the afternoons, lugging in and things like that. And yet what we saw in the Louisiana Derby was anything but. It was a new and improved Catching Freedom. What do you suppose went into that?
I guess just maturity. His last two works before the Louisiana Derby were really good. They were by far the best works he'd ever had. I mean, he was kind of touting himself that he could be moving forward. You really never know what these horses – he ran well in the Risen Star, and his works prior to the Risen Star were, you know, pretty you know, pretty average. So you never know when one starts actually working better when they hadn't been, if they're, you know, sometimes it'll go the wrong way on you. But, you know, I think given the setup of the race and everything, I thought it was a huge effort. I mean, he really, you know, started his run at the half mile pole and was able to, you know, finish it off and finish up well and look like a mile and a quarter is obviously not going to be an issue for him.
Did the last to first running style tell you anything? Did it surprise you?
Yes. I didn't really think they were going that quick. It did surprise me a little bit. It's not where we wanted to be. We'll definitely take it, but it's not where we wanted to be. Flavian said when Todd's horse to the inside of him broke through the gate, he lunged forward as well and kind of hit the gate as well. He's not a real big horse, so he didn't pop it open, but he said when he rocked back, he said when they popped him, he jumped well, but he said he just wasn't that quick away from there. And he thinks that may have had a little bit of something to do with why he didn't come out as well as he did.
Brad, what is going to be the game plan for the next 5 weeks with Catching Freedom? Maybe give us a little thumbnail sketch of his physical and mental makeup and what he needs to do to get ready for the first Saturday in May.
Well, I'm thinking right now I probably have four works. First one, not this weekend, but the following week, 14 days out, something like that. You know, we'll obviously watch the weather. We can get a lot of wet weather the month of April at Churchill or in the Kentucky area. But, you know, I think just keep him on every 7-day schedule, four works prior to the Derby. And you know, he shows up and runs. He's a horse that carries good flesh. He's not a big horse. He's medium sized. He's a good mover, puts a good bit into his gallops. His works, like I said, have just been average. And, you know, we're looking to, you know, his first work back will be pretty basic work, may even take him by himself and not looking to do much with him. But then, you know, the three leading up, we'll ask him for a little bit more. And hopefully, you know, we can see a little bit what we saw of him of the morning, the two works prior to the Louisiana Derby.
So, Brad, let's switch gears and talk about some of your three-year-old fillies. And if the race will run tomorrow, the Kentucky Oaks, I guess Tarifa would be the favorite. But the horse that might knock her out of that position is also trained by you, Impel, who's going to go in the Central Bank Ashland and has a big following right now. First of all, tell us more about Impel and why did she get off to a late start in her career and how good is she?
Well, she came in, she trained along, she acted like she's had some ability. She had some shin issues there last fall, got her back going, trained her at Churchill, sent her down to the fairgrounds. She won New Year's Day, and I think she's very good. She's got a great mind. She doesn't overtrain. She's not super, super aggressive, does whatever you ask of her. Obviously, she's took that step forward and stretched out there at Oaklawn. I did miss a little bit of time with her between her maiden win and her maiden win in the allowance win at Oaklawn. She had a minor setback. She recovered fine. And, you know, off to the Ashland. She just made it to Churchill. She'll have one work here at Churchill. And then looking forward to running her in the Ashland.
Brad, I've noticed, I mean, as good as you are with three-year-old colts, and then really you're good in every division, but it seems like year in and year out, you are really loaded with three-year-old fillies going back to Monomoy Girl. And again, like you might have the first two choices if things break your way in the Kentucky Oaks. Is there a reason why, well, maybe you don't agree with me, but is there a reason why you're good with other horses and super good with young fillies?
I think it's just probably training for clients like or owners like Judmont and Goodoff, and I mean that obviously world class breeding operations, and you know they give us an opportunity with some good fillies, and that's probably the biggest thing to do with it, and obviously great help. So it's that's the two things you got to have for sure.
You know, as good as Tarifa looked in winning the Rachel Alexandra before Saturday, there was really no doubt in my mind that Impel was better than Tarifa. And now, watching the way Tarifa ran in the Fairgrounds Oaks, I'm not so sure. And I tell people all the time that trainers, the people who are the closest to these horses, also learn things a lot, especially with young and improving three-year-olds as they go. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, it's no doubt. And you know, as much as we put into their day-to-day training and their weekend works and stuff, at the end of the day, what means more than anything is the races in the afternoon. We all form opinions but at the end of the day, you're going to learn more from them when you lead them over in the afternoon, because ultimately that's where they shine or they don't. And Tarifa has been very, very good at the fairgrounds this winter and received some figures that definitely, you know, just looking back last year with Godolphin, we had the favorite for the Oaks with wet paint, and they obviously won the Oaks with pretty mischievous. And, you know, this Phillies numbers are, you know, much higher than those two Phillies leading up to the Kentucky Oaks. So she's very good. She's aggressive. She likes to train. She likes her job, but she showed the other day with having a little bit of a rough run into the first turn and being a touch aggressive, turning up the backside. She's still, you know, she doesn't give in. She stays on. And that's something that you can't teach. They're just born with it. She's a competitor, bottom line.
If she had lost that stretch drive, would there have been a foul claim?
I don't think so. I didn't see a whole lot. No, I'd have been a little disappointed. But overall, I mean, I know a lot of people had jumped on another filly in the race. But when you look back at the Rachel, I mean, she really started separating herself from those fillies. And I know it was in the mud and everything, but I thought she stamped herself as the best filly down there this winter. And she definitely showed that on Saturday.
Brad, flipping the script back to the Colts, on Saturday you've got Timberlake, who'll start as the second favorite in the Arkansas Derby. This is a colt who, on paper, has plateaued. If you go by the buyer speed figures, he's run 93s in three consecutive races over almost a six-month span. But that doesn't tell the whole picture. I know he, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, he was a bit unsettled into the clubhouse turn, and it really seemed to knock him off his ball game for the entire race. You gave him some time off. He came back in the Rebel, and he tried to rate again, but a little bit of a different story this time. Tell us about how he's progressing, please.
That's right. Yeah, he relaxed well. Really liked what we saw from him there in Oakland going into the first turn and the trip he set. And, you know, he wasn't – I didn't feel like we had the screws really tight on him leading up to the Rebel. I was – a couple weeks before the Rebel, I was a little concerned that he would be ready to run. But, you know, he stepped up. He showed that, you know, he's a good colt and could handle the two turns and the mile and 16th, and we're hoping a mile and an eighth and even a mile and a quarter. But we think you know he's an unbelievable physical. I mean he is a very, very good looking horse. He's always been good. I mean, he stamped himself from the first time he breezed at Keeneland in the spring that he was a good colt. And he's always showed up and run. Like you said, maybe the Breeders' Cup, a little bit of a rough run to the first turn. He was a little keyed up, but he's learning. He's mellowed out. His works have gotten better in regards to settling the first part in him. And I do think he's definitely tighter and you know, ready to go Saturday as opposed to the condition we had him in leading up to the Rebel.
Maybe pretty soon you'll get to meet Justin Timberlake. Who knows?
We'll find out about that. Great to have a celebrity at the Derby to watch his namesake. Back to Timberlake, Brad. You've been making good use of Flavian Pratt. He rides both your top three-year-olds, Timberlake and Catching Freedom. Has he committed, or have you committed him to one horse or the other? Or are you just going to wait and see how it plays out between now and, you know, entry time?
Yeah, we'll just wait. I mean, I'm hoping to have some answers before entry time, but yeah, we'll obviously get through this Arkansas Derby first. And right now he has the call with a colt Encino in the that we're pointing for the Bluegrass as well. So you know, we'll it'll all sort itself out over the next few weeks.
So we're kind of glossing over a third three-year-old that you have that maybe is just a little bit more under the radar, but who is a really good second in the Gotham behind Deterministic, and that would be the son of Justified, Just a Touch. What do you think about him, and where are we likely to see him next?
He just shipped from Belmont back down to Keeneland. He breezed there yesterday morning and had a really, really good move. This is a good colt. You know, like you said, he's lightly raced, only two starts. Didn't make his debut, I don't think, until late January. And then, you know, we asked him to, you know, flew him up to New York. He was a really good second wide trip. Big figures, you know, I think he's very, very good. We'll see. Once again, we're planning on the Bluegrass right now. And, he's a big horse, covers a lot of ground, works, very, very flashy workhorse. So, I mean, he's definitely a horse we're excited about. And, you know, he's going to have to accomplish a lot in a little short window, but we're happy with what we've seen from him. We do think he's a very good colt.
And another one on the list is Nash. He just won the Hutt Spring Stakes on Saturday by open lengths. And more of a general question about Nash that I'll ask you to tie in more specifically, please. But Over the past couple of years, the Kentucky Derby prep schedule has evolved, or some might say devolved, to where there's no longer any races outside of 4 weeks from the Derby. All the major points races stop now on the, or they end now on the first Saturday in April. And I look at a horse like Nash on Paper and I say, well, he certainly had some Derby aspirations for him. He broke his maiden by more than 10 lengths back in the fall. He had three races at a mile and a 16th where he was a beaten favorite. And now he's kind of sparked to life again, maybe just cycled into his natural form. But with specific reference to Nash and more generally to that question, you know, would he show up in another race between now and Derby Day that could get him some points? Or would you prefer to see a race like 3 weeks out, like the Oakland used to have the Arkansas Derby?
Well, one race we do have is the Lexington. That I think that's the 3 week race where you can pick up some points. I think we're going to stick to one turn. I know he won a 2 turn mile race the other day, but I think we're going to stick to one turn around him. We're looking at the Pat Day Miles is our next go with him. I think we've got enough feedback and seen enough from him of the afternoons to feel like that he's really doesn't want to go much further than a mile. He's another one that's a very good workhorse, gets you excited in the afternoon, gets you excited in the mornings. And you know, look, he's never run a bad race. Just, you know, really wasn't giving us really what we thought we were going to see. So, you know, I don't really think there's any sense in trying to stretch him back out. I think we've seen enough of that, you know, December, January, and February, and now we got him back on the winning track at the 2 turn mile distance. And I think the 1 turn mile in the Pat Day mile might be something we're going to look at. He's another horse that, you know, we've been running fairly often. I mean, he raced in October, November, December, January, February, and March. So, I mean, you know, he's got several runs underneath of him, and I don't feel like we need to be running back in 2-3 weeks and just trying to make the Kentucky Derby. I mean, I always say every year there's a Derby winner and there's 19 Derby horses. And I don't know if he's a horse that really wants a mile and a quarter. So, you know, I think, you know, for his sake and his long-term career, probably be better to give him a little bit more time between now and his next start.
Brad, let's really switch gears here and take you to Dubai. Saudi Crown going to run in the Godolphin Mile. Very talented horse. Give us the latest on him and your expectations for what you hope to accomplish with him in Dubai.
Well, I expect him to win. I mean, I really do. He ran a great race there in Riyadh. It was a very exciting race. And, it's always a question mark when you're running back in 5 weeks off a big run like that. But, you know, he's really done well. My son Blake's there with him. You know, I get obviously the videos every day of how he's doing. And he looks amazing. He looks like he's put on weight. He's moving well. And I don't see any reason why he wouldn't step up. And if he can run a similar race, I think he's, you know, it should be good enough. We'll see.
Are you now kind of wishing you'd sent First Mission to the Dubai World Cup instead of the Essex the way you ran?
Yeah, you know, he was, you never really know. Like, we obviously used the excuse of him not liking the track at Gulfstream, and it, I think it was a legit excuse. He never at any point in the race looked comfortable to me. He was not traveling forward. Louis said he didn't handle the track. I think it was pretty obvious to see. But, you know, you never really know. We brought him back from Gulfstream. We trained him there at the fairgrounds. I thought he was a little flat the first week or two we were training him. And he started coming along. And over the last, I'd say, 3 weeks prior to the Essex, he really turned it on and showed that he was, showing signs of himself leading up to the Pegasus. Because I expect him to win the Pegasus. I loved him. I loved him that day. Just didn't take to the surface. And, it was good to see him get his feet back underneath of him. And, you know, look, I mean, we'll see how this year goes, but maybe he'll get an opportunity to travel overseas next year.
Brad, maybe to wrap it up here with a look ahead to the future. I know it's very early in the season, but trainers are always planning for the near-term future, at least. And at what point are you going to have your two-year-old cycling into the stable? And do you have any that you're particularly looking forward to seeing in action?
2 year olds are already, we had some come in February, but no, we don't get in too big a hurry with them. We've got some fillies that we're hoping to get started. I'm not certain they would make Keeneland. If not Keeneland, maybe the first part of Churchill, but, we kind of let them tell us. I really, really have a hard time getting a line on them this early. Especially with a lot of the pedigrees, we get more 2 turn middle distance horses and stuff, but, I'm hoping to have some runners at Churchill, at least Churchill in the spring, 2 year olds anyway.
Well, Brad Cox, thank you so much for joining us here on the TDN Writers Room podcast. Congratulations on a just terrific weekend last week with your four stakes winners. Keep up the good work and we'll see you in the winner's circle.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you guys soon. Thank you.
As a Green Group guest of the week, Brad Cox will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation with a Green Group. For more information on how the Green Group can save you taxes, visit www.greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from the Green Group.
Are you paying too much in taxes? The Green Group can help. There's a reason the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisors. They save you money and share successful strategies. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport, like Eclipse Award-winning champions Jaywalk and Wonderwheel. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
Okay, so last weekend we had Louisiana Derby winner Catching Freedom, Jeff Ruby winner Endlessly, Fairgrounds Oaks winner Tarifa, Bourbonette Oaks winner Everland. They all won important Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks prep races. They're all high up on the leaderboards in the point standings. They also have one other important thing in common. To absolutely no one's surprise, all four bred in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. You can find your next Kentucky bred at the OBS April sale. Breed them, buy them, race them. We all win.
Well, a huge weekend of racing, especially when it comes to the Kentucky Derby preps. Two of the biggest and most productive prep races out there, the Florida Derby at Gulfstream Park, the Arkansas Derby at Oaklawn, will be run this Saturday afternoon. Randy, what's the NBC coverage of these races this weekend?
NBC coverage, Bill, is on CNBC, the cable network, and it will be from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. We'll have coverage of the Florida Derby, the Gulfstream Park Oaks, and we'll also take a look back at that morning's UAE Derby and Dubai World Cup.
Well, it's going to be a huge week of racing, particularly when it comes to two races, Florida Derby and the Arkansas Derby, two of the most important prep races for the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, the big boys are coming out to play this weekend. There's no doubt about that. Let's start with the Florida Derby presented. It's the Curlin Florida Derby. I want to give a shout out to the folks at Stan Curlin. Randy, to me, this race is a jumble and a mess because I don't know what to do with Fierceness. You know, one day he's a superstar. The next day he gets beat 20 lengths in the Champagne. Then he's a superstar in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then, you know, I know they kind of came up with some excuses for his Holy Bowl, but that was not the Fierceness that we saw in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile by no means. It was not a particularly good race. And he drew the 10 post. So I've just given you a lot of reasons to not bet on him or not pick him. But having said that, would I be surprised if he won by 5 or 6 lengths? Not in the least. So from a gambling or picking standpoint, I don't know what to do. I don't think I will pick him because of all the things that I brought up about him, all the problems. But I might go with Hades in here for our friend John Green, just on the fact that the horse has done nothing wrong. 3 for 3, won the Holy Bull, draws the 2 post. We'll see what happens there. But Randy, what do you make of Fierceness?
I don't know what to make of Fierceness. I don't think Mike Rapoli knows what to make of Fierceness. I don't think Todd Pletcher knows what to make of Fierceness. And they were saying the same thing before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, by the way, because the horse looked so good when he broke his maiden. And then he looked so bad when he ran in the Champagne. You know, they flat out said, you know, most owners, trainers wouldn't even send the horse to Santa Anita for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile off a race like the Champagne. But he's trained so exceptionally well that we feel like we have to, because he trains like, you know, like an absolute standout, like a champion. And lo and behold, he ran a gigantic race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And now we find ourselves right back in that situation again. He did have some excuses in the Holy Bull, legitimate excuses, but I agree. He still didn't look like the same fierceness as we saw in the Breeders' Cup. And yet, coming out of that race, he has continued to train sensationally at Palm Beach Downs. So what do you do, right? I mean, I still put him number one in my Derby rankings only because I feel that if all of these three-year-olds run their best races on any given day, fierceness wins. I think he showed us that in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. TD mentioned earlier, there are not a lot of real speed horses in this year's Kentucky Derby, which would play to fierceness's advantage because he's a horse that likes to be right up in the early mix. You know, I can see him right outside of Track Phantom in the Derby if it shapes up that way. So I think he's the horse to beat. Would I want to take a short price on him given what he did in the Holy Bull? No. And if I was going to bet against him in the Florida Derby, I probably would go more toward Conquest Warrior than Hades, because I think if Fierceness doesn't win the Florida Derby, it's probably unlikely he's going to have the same sort of problems at the start. So if he doesn't win the Florida Derby, I think he'll at least show his speed, which will be to the disadvantage of Hades, who's a front-running type. And I think it could play into the hands there of Conquest Warrior. But it's a confusing race because of Fierceness. I agree.
And we talk about Fierceness being hung out to dry in his outer in post 10, which is not an advantageous draw going 9 furlongs at Gulfstream. Neither is post 9 for Conquest Warrior. I believe the stat that Mike Welsh quoted in Daily Racing Form was it's right. 2 for 105 over the last 15 years since Gulfstream reconfigured their main track. But for Conquest Warrior, I don't think it's as much of an issue because he's not a speed horse. He's not going to have to be flying out of the gate and trying to obtain good early position before the first turn. He can sit a mid-pack trip, and we've seen him do that in his last two races at Gulfstream, although he's encountered so much trip trouble in his maiden win that I start to wonder if he's a horse who creates his own trouble and then has to extricate himself from it. Last time out in an allowance race, he was 1-5 against 5 other horses who are not Triple Crown caliber. And Jose Ortiz had him backing off of the heels of rivals 7/8 out. A furlong later, he re-engaged him and put him up into the race. He sliced him inside. He came outside. You can get away with that in a short field against those caliber of horses when you're 1-5. We'll see what he does on Saturday. But at the very least, I think he's going to have a couple of targets in the form of Hades and Fierceness. And hey, he's 2 for 2 at Gulfstream. He's already won at 9 furlongs, and he is sure to get that speed set up. So I think there are some positives for Conquest Warrior.
I will say this. If I'm Todd Pletcher, I tell John Velasquez, go. Don't mess around. Go. Don't worry about Hades. Go. He's the best horse in the race on paper. He's the best horse in the race, I think, if he gets a decent start out of the gate. He's got that outside draw. And I don't think they need to mess around. And I think they need to just take it to the competition and may the best horse win. That's what I would do.
I'll take it one further, Randy. If I were Todd Pletcher, I'd scratch. That is an awful post position. Why not just good scratch point. And come back next week in the bluegrass? You know, I mean, he could run a great race, but he hung 6 wide on the first turn and run third. So I've never liked this mile and eighth races at Gulfstream. You know, they made the track different. On a mile track, this doesn't make any difference, but that's what I would do because I cannot pick a horse from the 10 post.
And Todd is concerned about that because he calls it a scrum into the mm-hmm. first turn, these races, because there's such a short run to the turn. Everybody wants to go to get position. And that's what he fears the most, that Fierceness won't get a super quick break out of the gate and he'll get hung wide.
Randy, the Gulfstream Park Oaks is a big race, of course, a prep for the Kentucky Oaks. What about that race drew your interest?
Well, there's a horse that no one has been talking about. And right now, in the way I see the Kentucky Oaks field shaping up, I think it comes down to three horses. We've already talked to Brad Cox about Tarifa and Impel. And my third horse would be Ways and Means, trained by Chad Brown, who is in the Gulfstream Park Oaks, who was a sensational two-year-old who got hurt. She's training very well. I think she'll be a pretty solid favorite in the Gulfstream Oaks. And I'll be surprised if she loses. And I think she'll be one of the favorites going forward for the Kentucky Oaks.
Yeah, she certainly does look like she has the credentials. Okay, so let's head to Arkansas for the Arkansas Derby. $1.5 million race. As usual, this race came up tough. We talked to Brad Cox about Timberlake. But on paper, I think the horse that, you know, really catches my attention is Mystic Dan, Randy, because of that huge figure last time out. Now, was it a little bit fluky because it happened in the mud? Will the horse bounce off that? Those are all possibilities. But based on that race, he's just faster than everybody else. He's going to have to regress, or somebody's going to have to really jump up, or else he's going to win this thing. Now, Muth is a terrific horse from Bob Baffert. Timberlake, we talked to with Brad Cox, you know, put up $1.5 million. You're supposed to get a good field, and they did. But I like Mystic Dan.
Look, it's not just the muddy track for Mystic Dan in the last race. I think what horse players are really going to have to wrestle with here is that when Oaklawn Park gets muddy, not every time, but a lot of the times, the way it dries, a fast path develops along the rail. And if you go back and you look at all the races on that day, February the 3rd at Oaklawn, there was definitely a sizable advantage to horses who had the inside path around the track. And Brian Hernandez rode an amazing race in there from post position number 9 to get Mystic Dan right over to the rail about halfway around the first turn. And he stayed glued to the rail all the way around the track, getting through inside on the turn, getting through inside down the stretch. Now, he finished like a wild horse. His stride was really, really impressive the last quarter of a mile. It's downhill at Oaklawn a little bit, yeah. But he went like in 24 and change for the final quarter, got that 101 buyer. How much of it was Mystic Dan and his improvement? How much of it was the fast path that he was running on along the rail? I think that's the big question people have to ask themselves.
And it's not just that gaudy buyer speed figure that he has to live up to. There were other numbers that back up, you know, questions about, is it the horse or was it the track? I mean, he finished up a final 16th in that race in 5.93 seconds. There have been 18 races run at a mile and a 16th that gave Derby points for qualifiers so far in 23-24. That was the fastest by far. So he's going to have to live up to a lot of numerical evidence from his previous race to see if he can repeat again on Saturday.
And this weekend's action, of course, also includes the Dubai World Cup. And Randy Moss won't know what to do with himself because his two favorite horses are going head-to-head, Senior Buscador and Dharma Sotagaki. Randy, what a dilemma. What are you going to do?
What am I going to do? I don't know who I'm going to root for here. I got to root for the American, right? I have to root for Senor Buscador. But look, I mean, Dharma Sotagaki's in with the big shot as well. It's going to be a very, very fun race to watch. And the Americans are fairly well represented, maybe not as much as in past years, not just in this race, but you've got Saudi Crown, we've talked about in the Godolphin Mile. Casa Creed is back again. I kind of thought he had retired, but no, Casa Creed is back in another effort to win the Al-Quaz Sprint. And then you've got the UAE Derby with some interesting horses as well.
Yeah, of course. Also, Auguste Rodin will run in the Shima Classic. And we know how special he is. So lots of racing action this Saturday.
Yeah, let's talk about the UAE Derby just for a second. TD might want to talk about this as well. In almost any Derby ranking that you look at, and we talked about the Saudi Derby and the race that Forever Young ran in that race to get up and win. It wasn't that visually impressive, but by the clock compared to the Saudi Cup, it was just as fast as the Saudi Cup. So it was an extremely impressive race. I've had a lot of people tell me that they believe their opinion that it was too tough on Forever Young, and it probably took a lot out of him because it was a long, grueling stretch run. But the fact remains that if you just go by numbers and you go by records and all that, you look at any top 10 right now, Forever Young in the UAE Derby is one of the Kentucky Derby contenders, I would think. You agree, TD?
And I think enough people had respect for those numbers to back Forever Young. I believe he was 12-1 in the most recent Derby futures betting sequence. So there is some support out there for him.
Yeah, he was the third choice behind Sierra Leone and maybe Timberlake. I don't remember, but he was way up there near the top. Yeah.
The XBTV work of the week is Moonlit Sonata, who worked 5 furlongs in 1 minute and 8.80 seconds Saturday morning at Santa Anita. Fifth last time out in the Robert B. Lewis behind Nisos. Moonlit Sonata is going to at least temporarily hop off the Triple Crown Trail and give the grass a try in a turf allowance at Santa Anita on Friday. We'll be right back after this message.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TD and Riders Room also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. West Point has now fully syndicated the 6 horses it acquired during the OBS March sale of 2-year-olds in training. And you know what will happen next. Those West Point owners will be vaulted into the world of instant camaraderie. But there's much more on the immediate horizon. Terry Finley and company will now turn their sights on the OBS April sale, where last year West Point and partners managed to acquire Zverev, a son of Oscar Performance, who on the Jeff Ruby undercard last Saturday at Turfway Park scored a pretty impressive maiden win with a buyer speed figure of 83 for trainer Cherie DeVoe. You can learn more about all this at westpointtb.com.
That's a wrap on this week's TDN Writers Room podcast. I want to thank my partners, Randy Moss and TD Thornton. TD filling in for Zoe Cabman, who'll be back next week. Also, our producers, Katie Petruniak and Anthony LaRocca, and our editors, Ali LaRocca and Nathan Wilkinson. And I saw Lucy back there. She's back there somewhere, right?
There she is.
There you go. Hi, Lucy.
Sound asleep. Hey, Lucy. Oh, she moved.
That's the most I've seen show of life I've ever seen from your wonderful dog. Anyways, thanks so much for tuning us in. Going to be a great weekend of racing with the Florida Derby and the Arkansas Derby, Dubai World Cup. We'll have plenty to talk about next week. Once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. See you later.